It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbring. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
the law school decided to create a new family law clinic with two goals in mind. The first goal being that this family law clinic would be in downtown Richmond, close to the population that we are hoping to serve. And the second goal of this clinic was to involve other disciplines, because anyone who has been touched by family law, either as a lawyer or as an individual in the community who's been involved in a case, knows that rarely there are only legal issues.
Tara Casey at the University of Richmond explains divorce in Virginia and how law students will be helping to meet this need. And you'll find out what contractors can do about bad customers and what customers can do about bad contractors during our weekly question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. This show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. The top scam recently reported to the Virginia Attorney General's office is the federal grant scam. You get a phone call saying you've been selected by the Federal Grants Administration to receive a free grant of thousands of dollars that you don't have to repay. The caller then asks for your bank account information so the money can be transferred into your account. However, there's no such agency as the Federal Grants Administration, and if you fall for the scam, your bank account will be wiped out. Scammers pressure people to divulge their bank account information so they can steal the money in the account. Always keep your bank account information confidential. Don't share it unless you are familiar with the agency and know why the information is needed. If you have to pay money to claim a free government grant, it isn't really free. A real government agency won't ask you to pay a processing fee for a grant that you've been awarded. Agencies and foundations that award grants are on the internet at www.grants.gov, which is the only official access point for all federal grant-making agencies. In other news, last month, the Virginia Department of Education reported that 81% of students in the class of 2008 graduated on time with a diploma. But not all diplomas are created equal. 5% of those were modified standard or special diplomas, which don't allow college admission or most military enlistments, while another 42% were standard diplomas, which won't qualify for most college admission without additional coursework. The Virginia Board of Education is revising its regulations to set an 80% graduation and completion index for a school to be fully accredited. But again, there's a catch. Every diploma is weighted equally, and too much weight is given to non-diploma credentials, such as GEDs and certificates of program completion. Under the plan, a school could be fully accredited if only 60% got diplomas and 34% got certificates of completion. The same would be true if only 20% got diplomas and 80% got GEDs. The revised regulations now head to the governor's office for review. The final 30-day comment period ends December 5. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbray. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is foster care. Foster care provides temporary care for children who can't live with their parents or other relatives. The local Department of Social Services, or DSS, takes legal responsibility, called legal custody, for a child when it's not safe for that child to live with parents or other relatives right now. Most children in foster care live with families, called foster families, but some children live in group homes or other residential settings. After a child is in foster care 60 days, DSS must file a plan with the court setting forth the goals for the child and the parents, the dates for reaching those goals, and the services DSS will provide to the child and the parents. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. And we're here with our weekly question and answer session. Our questioner is ready with the question. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name's John. I'm from the West End of Henrico.
Welcome to the show, John. What question do you have for us?
Well, throughout the course of time, I realized that there's a lot of people getting contractors to do work for them that have bad experiences with the contractors. As well, there are contractors that have bad experiences with their customers and getting paid. What resources and recourses do each have?
And, John, have you actually been a licensed contractor in Virginia?
Yes, sir, I have.
And I assume you've had some bad experiences with customers and heard of customers with bad experience with licensed contractors.
Yes, sir. I've repaired behind other contractors, and I've also had problems getting paid at the end of jobs before myself.
Well, both customers and contractors have remedies against each other, and the customer actually has a better remedy. Both start with basically suing each other. A customer can sue a contractor in the general district court. A contractor can sue a customer in the general district court. You can do this on your own, by yourself, without an attorney in the general district court for up to $15,000. If you sue in the small claims division of the general district court, you can sue for up to $5,000, but the advantage there are no lawyers allowed. The rules of evidence are much more relaxed, and you get a much quicker trial, usually 3 weeks instead of 3 months. Now, once you get a judgment's nothing more than a piece of paper at the courthouse that says that someone owes you a certain sum of money. And you would have to go through the collections process to collect the judgment, typically garnishing income if they have any garnishable income, or garnishing a bank account if they have any money in a bank account that is subject to garnishment. There are also other collection remedies, but they are very long and hard and involve selling personal property or even filing a separate lawsuit to sell someone's house and land out from under them, which is very unusual. Now, that would be the remedies available to the contractor. The customer has one additional remedy, which is if they got a judgment against a licensed contractor due to the licensed contractor's improper or dishonest conduct, and they plead it in court, they prove it in court, and they have it said in the judgment that the contractor engaged in improper or dishonest conduct. The customer has a right to file a claim with something called the Virginia Contractor Transaction Recovery Fund. There's a lot of paperwork involved. There are a lot of deadlines. There are a lot of rules. And it really helps to have a lawyer do that. I recently did one. It took 2 years. And we finally recovered everything that my client had paid out, plus her court costs. And the limit on that claim against one contractor for one transaction is $20,000, which usually would cover most home repair contracts. I assume that during your time as a contractor, you had to pay into this transaction recovery fund.
I have on several occasions. I think 1 year there were two payments that had to come in at different times because there were so many claims going against the fund.
Right, exactly. And hopefully no customer ever had to file a claim against you?
Not yet.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, thank you for being on the show. Appreciate you being here. We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and we're here at the University of Richmond School of Law with Tara Casey, who is the director of the Harry L. Carrico Center for Pro Bono Services. Welcome to the show, Tara.
Thank you so much.
Now, we're going to be talking today about divorce, both contested and uncontested, both fault and no fault. And I'd like to start asking, what is the difference between a fault-based divorce and a no-fault divorce?
Well, the no-fault divorce is somewhat self-explanatory. It is when two people who are married realize that they no longer would like to be married for whatever reason, and they are not contesting the dissolution of the marriage, the end of the marriage, and they are not in disagreement about distribution of property, child custody. Really, they are in agreement about everything, including the end of the marriage. And Virginia law allows those individuals to proceed with a no-fault divorce, which is relatively uncomplicated, although you do need an attorney, and can be resolved relatively quickly as well.
Now, how long do people need to be separated in order to file for an uncontested no-fault divorce?
It depends upon whether the couple has children. If they have a child or children, they need to be separated for a year. And when I mean separated, I mean they cannot be sharing a living space. They cannot be sharing an apartment or a house. And they also cannot be presenting themselves to others as husband and wife. They truly need to be making their intentions known to each other and to the public that they would like to end the marriage. And if they have children, it is a year. And if they do not have children, it can be 6 months.
And if it's a six-month separation, do they need to put something in writing, some sort of separation agreement, in order to be able to then file for a divorce?
Yes, they usually, in order to go forward with a no-fault divorce, and there needs to be some type of a separation agreement that discusses the distribution of any type of assets. And when I mean assets, I'm talking about anything that the couple is holding together as a couple, a checking account that's in both of their names, any type of furniture or any other type of assets or tangible property. Those issues need to be resolved between the couple before they can go forward with a no-fault divorce.
Now, before we go on to what the University of Richmond School of Law is doing, could you describe briefly what the fault-based reasons for a divorce are in Virginia?
Well, fault-based reasons for divorce are when something occurs either within the marriage or something occurred prior to the marriage, unbeknownst to one of the members, that renders the marriage unable to continue. So that could be items like issues like adultery, or if there was fraud prior to the marriage and there was a lie about identity, for instance, or about the ability to have children, or some type of a disease that was not disclosed to the partner before the marriage that was then later revealed. Abandonment. These are all grounds for divorce under Virginia law that can go forward with the fault-based divorce. And I'm just saying fault-based, that's not the technical term, but it just shows the two different roads for divorce that there are in Virginia. And on that road, then you have also disagreements about distribution of property, about child custody, about any type of support payments. And those are cases that are going to have to go through the courts a little bit longer. They are going to have to require more judicial review and involvement. In the case of children, definitely more judicial review and involvement.
Now, I understand that the University of Richmond School of Law has started a new family law clinic. Could you tell us a bit about that and what your plans are for that?
The family law clinic is a new one here at the university. Its seeds were planted about a year ago when the law school decided to create a new family law clinic with two goals in mind. The first goal being that this family law clinic would be in downtown Richmond, close to the population that we are hoping to serve. And the second goal of this clinic was to involve other disciplines, because anyone who has been touched by family law, either as a lawyer or as an individual in the community who's been involved in a case, knows that rarely there are only legal issues. There are also issues that affect the family as a whole, mental health, maybe some social welfare issues. And so the law school wanted to create a clinic that could provide wraparound services to the families in these legal situations. So it brought on partners from the Virginia Commonwealth University School of Social Work and Department of Clinical Psychology. And students, graduate level students from both of those schools, are also participating in the clinic to, again, as I said, provide those types of wraparound services, this multidisciplinary approach to family law situations. The clinic just started this fall. We have a wonderful new clinic director. Her name is Dale Margolin. She has joined our faculty from St. John's University School of Law in New York. She is she's nationally renowned for her work on foster care issues, especially on the issues of children aging out of foster care. And she has brought such energy and a dynamic nature to this clinic. We started this clinic this fall. There are only about four students who are in the clinic, and they're taking this fall to be the planning, the research, and the development clinic, and then next spring to launch it.
Okay, so the clinic is now at the main campus out on the West End this fall, and the plan is to relocate it to U of R downtown, in early 2009?
Correct.
And where will it physically be located?
The UR downtown space is going to be at the corner of 7th and Broad Street, right across the street from the new federal courthouse that has been built, actually more catty corner from the federal courthouse that has been built. And it is going to be on the first floor of that space, and it's currently undergoing renovation and reconstruction.
And who do you envision as the target population for people to get services from U of R downtown law school?
Well, the law school is partnering with the university as a whole. It's really a location for the entire university to take advantage of. But there are going to be three programs that will be running out of the downtown location. And the first is, as I mentioned, the Family Law Clinic. The second is an initiative called the Richmond Families Initiative, which is being managed by the Center for Civic Engagement here at the university. Judy Mejia is the program director there, and that's engaging undergraduate students with community engagement and nonprofits as tied into coursework and academic exploration. And the third are some of the pro bono programs that we have going on, including a no-fault divorce program and a protective order project.
So the client population, are they going to be from City of Richmond? Will you be beyond the City of Richmond? Will there be income and resource rules? Have those issues been thought out yet?
Well, depending upon the program, I can give you an answer. The Family Law Clinic is still, as I mentioned, in its research and development phase. So client intake and eligibility are areas that are still being explored and haven't been finalized yet. For the pro bono programs, our partnerships are with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, the Virginia Bar Association, and the Richmond Bar Association. And just as a side note, in order for law students to do pro bono work, they need to work with a supervising attorney. That is the basic rule of Virginia ethics. A law student cannot represent an individual without a supervising attorney or work on a case without a supervising attorney. And so our pro bono programs rely upon the generosity of time given to it by attorneys in the area. To that end, we are partnering with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Society to help us draw in the client population. So those who are going through the Central Virginia Legal Aid Society's intake process would be the clients that we would ultimately be able to serve.
Okay, that sounds like a very good program. So it's aimed primarily at the low income, the people who are basically at or below 125% of poverty who ordinarily would come through legal aid.
Yes, and what we see is especially important with no-fault divorce program is you have a population of individuals who are seeking to move on with their lives, who are seeking to start a new chapter, and because you need an attorney in Virginia in order to obtain a no-fault divorce, they cannot do that because they cannot afford an attorney. And what we're hoping to do is to help those individuals who otherwise could not afford an attorney, receive the representation they need to obtain those no-fault divorces, and to really move on with their lives.
And what role are the law students going to be playing in all of this? I mean, you said that obviously you need to have the law students matched up with an attorney who would actually be responsible for the legal work that gets done. So what is the role of the law student in assisting the attorney here?
Well, we are very grateful and pleased to have a partnership with the Richmond Bar Association on this project, and they are the ones who will be providing the volunteer attorneys. What we are planning to do is that when a client is identified by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society as being appropriate for this program, the law student and the attorney will work together to help with this client. The law student can interview the client because really to draw up the paperwork for a no-fault divorce, you really just need to find out some basic information and do some basic intake with a client. And that is something that is appropriate for a law student to do. A law student can also assist an attorney with basic drafting of the documents that will be filed in the court for the no-fault divorce. Another aspect of a no-fault divorce that's required is a deposition of a third party, and that just means to a sworn interview with someone regarding the existence of the marriage and also the willingness for this marriage to be dissolved. And we are hoping that law students will also have the opportunity to sit down on those depositions and really gain that experience of what family law and transactional law and also some court and civil procedure involve by becoming involved from beginning to end.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Tara Casey at the University of Richmond School of Law. And tell us again, when do you think that the U of R downtown will actually open its door in 2009?
We are looking to be in the space at the start of the spring semester, mid-January or so.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about divorce and separation. The first tip is that generally you must be separated continuously and without interruption for 1 full year to get a divorce in Virginia. Only two reasons, adultery or your spouse's conviction of a felony and sentenced to more than a year in prison, don't have a waiting period. The second tip is that if you have no minor children of the marriage and a signed separation agreement, the waiting period is a 6-month separation. The third tip is that there's no such thing as a legal separation in Virginia. Separation is simply not living together. You don't need any papers to live separate and apart from your spouse.
for the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Harassed by debt collectors? You're not alone. But what if there were a federal law that allowed you to turn the tables on them? Join us next week when private attorney Dale Pittman explores the powerful remedies available to beleaguered debtors under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.
My Lord.